Outskirts Science Fiction Theater on Avid Reader Nation. Hello, I am Deidre Huey, the eroticist and appreciator of science fiction. Tonight on Outskirts Science Fiction Theater, we are going to get read to by author of Harvest, T.D. Harvey. T couldn't be with us live tonight, but she did send an audio of her reading of her horror short story, Harvest. Enjoy!
Hello, my name is T.D. Harvey, and this is my story for Anything Goes called Harvest. It has been a long time since autumn was celebrated with festivals to give thanks for the plentiful harvest. My grandmother told me it was her favourite time of the year when she was a child. She told me of trees with burning leaves and children turned to ghouls and monsters. She told me of plunging her face into cold water to catch floating apples, winds blowing through the streets, and rain washing away the dust of summer. But now, no longer are dolls made of corn or plough horses decorated to revel in the bounty we bring in from the fields. No harvest feast is eaten, no bread broken. Instead we wait, because autumn has changed. As the weather turns, I feel a slight nip in the morning air, a portent of autumn and all it holds. The excesses of summer are about to fade as winter stalks ever closer. Then the earth will freeze, a blanket of white sterilizing the land, killing what needs to be killed before spring breathes new life. But before winter falls, autumn must come. We still bring in the harvest, that has not changed. But now we are a part of the harvest. Each man, woman, and child must watch the skies for fear of their own reaping. So I, like all who live here, am sensitive to the changing of the seasons. I can feel them waking from their slumber and preparing for their short but brutal feast. We are blessed in a way because they are limited to such a short existence in our world, but they still manage to take so many of us. I watch the skies at dawn as my parents begin the harvest. The corn is plump and juicy, the carrots large and bright. The barn is filled with wonderful smells as the harvest is piled within. Some vegetables are hung to dry and some packed away to preserve. But I cannot close my eyes and breathe deep the glorious scent because I have to watch. Once the sun is strong, I repair baskets and make food for my family. I am too feeble to help with the harvest. I fell from the back of the plough horse a few summers back and broke my legs. Although I can still walk, they no longer have the strength they once did. Sometimes I worry my incapacity puts my family at risk. My parents, brother and sister must work longer to bring in the crops because I cannot help them. When I hear of a family who had no one to watch the skies for them and who suffered heavy losses because of it, I am glad I cannot harvest. Our nearest neighbour and his entire family were caught in the fields at dusk. I saw the shadows heading their way and rang the huge bell in warning. We can only assume they didn't hear, or I didn't warn them in time. We listened as screams drifted on the breeze like white, clock-like dandelion seeds. We could do nothing more. To help would only result in our deaths. The following morning we rushed to their farm. From the gate the scene held little evidence of an attack, as if they had simply been plucked into the sky. A small wooden cart was overturned, its bounty strewn through the field in front of the farmhouse. As we advanced, more became evident. Speckles of red littered the overturned produce, as if the tomatoes had burst. Of course, we knew the crimson dusting was not vegetable-borne. Large red splashes led from the field to the house, where the door hung limply from one hinge, large scrapes gouged into the wood. Without a word, we entered through the broken doorway. A wooden rocking chair lay broken and splintered at the bottom of the stairs. The metallic smell of blood was nauseating. The sight of swathes of the family's life force made my gorge rise. Huge scratches marked the wood and walls, and debris littered the floor. Many of the windows were broken, and blood bathed the house in a gory blush.
"Here!"
My brother called us to the master bedroom, where a slender, small arm protruded from under the broken bed. The men worked to lift the damaged bed, and I reached underneath. The slender hand was cold as I gripped it. and when I pulled it, it came easily. There was no woman at the end of that arm, just torn skin and sinew. I cried out, my stomach churned at the sight, and I vomited on the rug, already stained with the woman's blood. My brothers and father threw the bed down and pulled me from the room. "I'm all right," I said. "Let's finish this and go home. This place gives me the creeps." My brothers agreed, Adam laughing nervously. The bathroom was clear, leaving us with only the baby's room to check. My father would not let me enter the nursery. I am glad he didn't. His face was alabaster when he turned and left the room, ushering me back down the stairs. Silently, we left the farm, allowing the birds to feast on the fallen crop. A new family lives there now. I keep my eyes on the sky as my family toils. I watch as the sun begins to dip and call out a warning before twilight falls. They come in the day if the cloud cover is sufficient. Despite the bright autumn sun, I watch for wisps that might filter its strength. We think direct sunlight hurts their eyes, or maybe burns their skin. They prefer the night, when our lights call to them like moths to the moon. My mother, sister, and I hurry into our cottage, whilst my father and brothers close the shutters and herd the braying livestock into the barn before boarding shut the big double doors. I keep watch at the front door, listening to the clunking of wood on wood until each is inside. My father turns to me with a smile before locking us in. We go through our regular autumn routine of securing the cottage before preparing dinner. My brothers check the guns, fetch more ammunition, and place them around the cottage. Father locks the doors and windows before lighting the fires, making sure nothing can enter through the chimneys. A loud screech pierces the gentle hum of work in our cottage, declaring the arrival of night. We fall silent as we listen and wait. A clattering on the roof makes us all look up, as if we can see through the ceiling and first floor to the tiles on the roof where the creature crawls. They are capable of moving in total silence, but they choose to make noise to scare us. We know this, but it still terrifies us. We cannot rationalize our fear away, because we also know how dangerous they really are. The clattering continues, and underlying it is an almost gentle but menacing whisper. It is an awful noise, and it makes me shiver. I move to sit next to my father, who puts a protective arm around my shoulders. My sister sits with our mother, and my brothers pace the cottage, keeping an eye for any weak points or damage. "Father!" my brother Adam calls. My father jumps from our seat, and I follow, father's momentum pulling me up. "Stay here," he orders, and leaves the room. I follow, knowing he will be angry with me, but feeling a strange need to see what is happening. We lost my eldest brother in last year's attack, and I feel somehow responsible, as if only I could have stopped it. I had called my family in from the field, and waited at the door for the men. The cows were walking ahead of my brothers towards the barn. A large black and white cow panicked, breaking free from the herd and running into the field. Adam quickly stepped in front of the others, stopping them from joining her. He waved his arms and shouted, forcing them into the barn. Whilst Thomas waited to shut the doors. My youngest brother, Jed, chased the cow. "Jed, no!" I held up my hand to my brother, as if to stop him running, and called to my father, who was bolting the shutters. "I'll get him," my brother Thomas said as he chased after Jed. A sudden breeze hit my shoulders and I realized they had arrived. Thomas raced across the field towards Jed, who was herding the errant cow back to the barn. A shadow fell across them in the dimming twilight, and I turned away, unable to witness what my ears could not ignore. A deafening bang filled the night. My father and brother Adam joined the fray. They fought off one of the winged beasts, the other a dark shadow on the ground, slain from the shot. They managed to get Jed home before more creatures arrived, but Thomas was lost. If I hadn't called out, Thomas would be alive, but Jed would not. Our father had been broken and Jed was withdrawn. For months he simply carried out his daily chores, not once speaking, smiling or singing. I know the autumn will always bring him pain. I really couldn't have changed a thing. But that knowledge does not stop me from following my father. I ignore the hissed warnings from my sister and the low growl from my mother and follow father into the hall. Adam, he calls in a stage whisper. Where are you? Here, Adam calls back from the top of the stairs, and my father begins to climb. I think they're in the attic. I am horrified to hear they are inside the cottage. I wonder how they could have found their way in, and how we didn't hear them breaking through the tiles. My father is obviously wondering the same as he asks, How? I haven't heard anything. I don't know, Adam replies. I, long, spindly arms and legs, descend slowly from the small hatch to the attic. Before I can scream, my brother is grabbed and swiftly pulled through, splintering the frame and tearing the ceiling. My father lunges for his legs and grabs hold, screaming Adam's name. I watch in horror as blood pours from Adam's body, covering my father in crimson, adorned with the dust and debris from the damaged hatch. I hold my father's shoulders as I see Adam's legs disappear through the gap and hear the ululating screech of the creature beyond. My father fires his shotgun through the rent in the ceiling, roaring with rage. I hold him tight to stop him from giving chase. Please, Daddy, I beg, using the name I had long since left behind in childhood. He's gone, Daddy. He's gone. My father's shoulders sag as he accepts defeat, but tighten almost immediately when we hear screaming from the living room. It is only then we realize none of our family has joined us at the hatch. We stare at each other in dismay, somehow knowing we were kept busy here, whilst the creatures gained entry elsewhere. Take my gun. Don't let anything through the hatch, he demands. Fire as soon as you see something, no matter what you see. Just fire.
But, Daddy, I say, trembling. I am afraid to be left here alone, despite the desperate screams I can hear from downstairs. Be strong, baby girl, he says softly, brushing my cheek with a calloused finger before racing down the stairs. After a moment, I see my younger brother Jed standing guard at the bottom of the stairs, pistol in hand. He smiles nervously up at me, and I return the gesture briefly, before returning my gaze to the hole through which my brother had passed. My body is shaking as I watch the gaping maw, with its ragged mouth spattered and stained with the blood of my kin. My gun shakes with my body, and I can strangely hear it rattling over the shouts and screams in the living room below. I think I must be blocking the violence from my ears, refusing to hear the breaking furniture, the screams of pain and the shrieks of the creature. No, creatures. There is definitely more than one. I block it all from my mind once more, focusing all my senses on the hole above me. Abby? I hear a distant whisper. Abby? I turn to my brother Jed, halfway up the stairs, and hiss, Get back down! It's quiet, Abby. It's quiet. I realize then that he is right. There are no more sounds in the cottage. The screaming has stopped, as have the sounds of fighting and the unnerving ululations of the creature. We turn to each other, Jed and me, our fear mirrored in each other's eyes. My brother is younger than me, but still a man at 14. He is strong and squarely built, but at this moment he looks like a small boy. I know I must look as small, if not smaller, given my weaker stature. Jed comes to me at the top of the stairs and stands with his back pressed against mine. We are both shaking and both silent as we wait for what will surely come soon. I am certain I can feel the creatures moving ever closer, out of sight and sound. As the silence and inaction stretches on, we begin to hope, to wish. Our breathing slows, mine mirroring Jed's, or perhaps the other way around, I am not really sure. We both still hold our guns ready, mine pointing into the attic, where I last saw Adam. Jed's pointing down the stairs, where I last saw our father, mother, and sister. Through the silence, a low, delicate scratching reaches towards us. I feel Jed's body stiffen, as does mine, and our guns aim a little straighter. I squint into the attic, straining to see through the mask of blackness, but see nothing. The scratching becomes a scraping, the scraping a dragging, the dragging a clawing. They are coming, and this small space will be our last stand. For an odd moment, I wonder who will take over our farm. I hope the creatures will be satiated with our meat and leave our livestock alone. We have lost so many cows, sheep, and horses to these creatures in the past. We stopped keeping pigs because they never lasted the autumn. I am jolted back to the present when my brother whispers, "This is it." "I'm sorry, Jed," I whisper back. "I am sorry for all the times I have teased my little brother. I am sorry for the extra burden my accident placed upon him and the rest of our family. I am sorry it is me he is left to fight with, and not our father, a much better shot. He seems to understand, and my apology needs no explanation." He whispers the same back to me. I wonder if he's apologizing for the time he told our father I was out meeting a boy from the other side of the village. For the times he rode past me showing off that he could still ride. For the slap to the horse that made it bolt and slip, landing on me and breaking my legs. We hold hands and we wait. When they come, we shoot, but there are too many of them, too few of us. We fight until we can fight no longer. We die together, brother and sister, last of our kin. Hi, I'm T.G. Harvey. I'm an independent dark fiction writer for both adults and children. That basically means that no matter what genre I try to write in, the story always has a dark edge to it. I get no choice in the matter. It's just how the stories come out. I'm what's called a discovery writer, so I don't plot my stories. I just sit in front of my laptop and write. It's a bizarre experience when you first do it, but it's good fun, and I find it gives the stories a more natural feel, less forced. The story I've read for you today is called Harvest. It's published in the unthemed anthology called Anything Goes by the Fiction Writers Group. I've had several short stories published in their wonderful anthologies. If you enjoy short stories, I suggest you take a look at their website. That's writersanarchy.com. So I'm currently in the process of completing work on my first novel, Paper Dragons and Shadow Demons. It's a middle grade dark fantasy novel about Sarah, a 12-year-old girl haunted by her imagination and something else that lurks in her room. And we've all had that fear in childhood of the monster in the closet, the monster under the bed, and this really feeds into all of that. This is the first of a trilogy, and I'm currently in the process of writing the first draft of the second book. I've had great fun writing it because it's loosely based on my childhood. I grew up in 1980s Southern England and had a vivid imagination even then, and it led me into all sorts of trouble. Although this is set as a middle grade children's book, it's not for the faint-hearted. It does have some pretty scary scenes, so I wouldn't advise it for more sensitive children. Having said that, it's the kind of thing that I would have loved as a child, and a few children have read it and absolutely love it, so that's really exciting. And I'm hoping for a summer release. Last year I published 9 short stories in different anthologies. This year I'm hoping to publish a short story collection of my own, and that will hopefully come out before the end of the year. I'm also managing the production of a charity anthology with a few friends called Panthology. The theme is all things pants, or if you're British like me, all things trousers. The project arose after we challenged each other that we couldn't possibly all write stories about pants. We've had great fun putting it together, and we've got a really eclectic mix of styles and genres, from drabbles to poetry, from comedy to horror thriller. We're hoping to release at some point this year, perhaps by the summer. So keep an eye out for that one. It's going to be good fun. And all the proceeds will be going to a homeless charity. We figure our literary clothing can help provide real clothing. So you can find me on my website at tdharveyauthor.com. And there's details on there of my publications. There's a few flash fiction pieces. And there's even a post on there about the origins of my pen name. So come on over and say hi. I'd love to hear from you. And thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoy Harvest.
Next week, January 17th, Nikkei Binger Marshall gives us a reading on Outskirts Science Fiction Theater. Listen to more authors on Outskirts Science Fiction Theater on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, Saturdays, on Avid Reader Nation page. Tomorrow, Sunday, January 11th at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, Imani Wrights will be here to read from Sugar on the Bonafide Literary Show. Learn more about Bonafide authors at www.bonafideliteraryshow.com. Thursday, January 15th, J. Love Benton has the spiel on Same Gender Loving and Loving It on the Book Tea at 3 p.m. Eastern here on Avid Reader Nation page on blogtalkradio.com. To reach out to any Avid Reader Nation shows, hit up avidreadernation@gmail.com. I'm Deidre Huey, the host of Outskirts Science Fiction Theater. Until you hear from me again, visit LaDramaPrincess.com, but only if you're over 18.